It's November the 7th, 2012. This is 508, a show about Worcester. I'm Mike Benedetti. Today in the show we have Chris Robarge.
Hello.
We have Colin Novick. Such a fast show, people can't even say hi. And Brendan Mellick.
How are you, sir?
I am good. Today is a day where there has been a freak snowstorm in the city of Worcester, shutting things down. We have a nice warm fire here. And today we're going to talk about Election Day. The election was yesterday for 2012, and all of these guys were involved. Chris was there running around from polling place to polling place as one of the people with the Voter Protection Network and the ACLU. Colin was there as a warden. Brendan was there as an observer in his role as a Democratic operative. And I was just a plain voter and read a lot of stuff on Twitter yesterday. I should also preface this by saying that I've been criticized on our past voting shows for being too nice to the Tea Party, and I'm going to commit this sin again today out of sympathy for all of the grieving Tea Partiers who are watching this. You'll notice that today's panel is completely made up of white men. We do it for you. Chris, how did Election Day go? Now, during the primary, there was a lot of allegations of voter intimidation. There was this Tea Party group, Activate Worcester, that before the primary was complaining about the fact that poor people were being registered to vote in Worcester. Oh, the horror. And then on election, on primary day, seemed to be doing some things that people certainly interpreted as being voter intimidation. This wasn't happening yesterday.
No. There was definitely a marked difference yesterday.
Okay.
There were definitely some issues that happened in places, but none that related to the sort of intimidation and harassment and hostility that we saw come from certain observers in the primary.
Right.
I did see a few of those people out. A few of them were missing, the city seemed to their credit, really do a good job making sure that the rules were clear to both the observers and the elections officials.
Mm-hmm.
I think that having people, set in a good, well-designated physical cordon helped. And I think also having a lot of observers, both from our group and also from the various candidate organizations, helped to make sure that there were people there who could identify someone who was getting a little out of hand and make sure that, if the poll workers needed someone to sort of initiate something happening about that they could be the people to do it.
Were you guys getting phone calls yesterday from people who were having questions, issues?
Yeah. I mean, I my phone rang all day.
Okay.
But it was more the sorts of issues around, I said the last time I was on the show that, to me, the single biggest suppressor of voters in the city of Worcester is the inactive list. And again, yesterday, that was the biggest problem.
Yeah.
It's just people getting bogged down by having to do this form and people getting, told that they needed to cast provisionals or getting told that they needed to leave and go get something. And it was a lot of that kind of stuff. There were a number of issues, but very few of them related to observers.
The guy in front of me was on the inactive list. He was completely flummoxed by this. He's one of these guys who's like, I've been voting for 20 years. I've lived in this building, the exact same building, for 20 years.
Yeah. It's interesting. I was on the list in September, and I vote all the time. So,
mm-hmm.
I didn't get a city census, so I didn't send it back, and that's all it takes, apparently.
Was there anything fun or crazy going on Election Day?
Yeah, I mean, there was all sorts of things. I mean, I think we'll probably wind up talking about some of the, more specific issues. But, I mean, it was a host of different things. But most of it involved issues with, people that should have been given a certain kind of ballot that weren't, or people that were being told to go somewhere else without the city, without the elections workers.
My phone is ringing.
Sure.
It's Bruce the Snow Ghost Russell. Do you want to be on a television show talking about the election? Okay, should I call you back? I'm gonna put you on speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, Bruce the Snow Ghost Russell, here in his small Google form. Bruce, you just chime in if you got anything to say. All right.
What's that?
Just chip in. Just chime in if you have anything to say. Chris Robarge was saying something though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Do you have any idea what you were saying?
Very little, but I'm just going to I'm just going to charge on all anyway. Right. Yeah, I think I was talking about the issues with folks being being told or being redirected to other places without somebody actually looking them up to see where they were supposed to vote. Mm-hmm. That happened a lot, particularly in the sixes, so up at Providence Street, 6-1, 6-2, 6-3. But I mean, overall, I thought that the day went well, given the turnout and given the staffing that's available. I thought that everybody tried to do the best that they could for the most part. And we didn't have, there might have been issues, there might have been confusion, but what I didn't see was the intimidation and suppression that we saw last time, and that was a big improvement.
That's awesome, Colin. I want to switch over to you. You were a warden.
Yes. 9-1.
Do you have like a uniform or a badge when you're a warden?
You're given a small paper sticker that goes onto your clothing. However, if your clothes are made of natural materials, it will fall off. It only sticks to polyester materials.
That's awesome. So the warden, you were telling me earlier, the warden is a paid position from that the city pays you to do.
That's right. For one day and one day only, you get to be the city's employee running a polling place in a random location, probably in a somewhat not so well heated location with lots and lots of people coming and complaining all day. It's a beautiful thing.
And what was your election day like?
It was busy. For instance, you get there at 6 o'clock in the morning.
You were at, we should also say where you were.
Temple Emmanuel.
Okay.
Temple Emmanuel, over on the left, 9-1. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you get there at 6 o'clock in the morning to set up. Somewhere around 7 o'clock in the evening, you realize, wait a minute, I don't think I actually had a lunch or dinner break. I'm not sure I hit the bathroom. It was that kind of day. It was insane. It was straight out. It was constant. People with voter certificates, with eyes. It was provisional voters. It was people trying to figure out where they really needed to vote. There's a foyer, and most Worcester voters honestly have no freaking clue what warden precinct they're part of. The only people who know warden precinct are the insiders, the people who are the policy guys.
The people who everyone are else, working the
they
polls.
Know the building if they're lucky, but there's redistricting.
Yes.
So they show up at the building, and then there are three polling places there. And there are like three lines, and each line could be half an hour to an hour and a half, and they have no idea what they're supposed to do. No clue. So you end up having people go out with books all day long and just one by one going down the room and saying, what street? What number? That line. What street? What number?
This is like when you're in line for a flight and they're like, if you're going to, Helsinki on the next flight, move over here.
Yeah, and so it was kind of funny. What ended up happening is the backup was 9-2. So you'd go out in the room and you're like, if you have any idea that you are 9-1 or 9-3, you don't need to do this. There's no waiting, no suffering. Just get out of this line. And everybody's like, but does anyone know where they're supposed to be? And there's this quiet. And you're like, all right, if you don't know, raise your hand. And then the whole line raises their hand. And you're like, oh. So anyway. So yeah, a lot of the day was processing people, making people show up where they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was it busier than?
This was insane. No. This was insane. This was even bigger than other presidential elections that we've had. People were turning up in huge droves. There was no quiet time. There was no downtime. It just kept going all the time. The volume was always there. It was insane. It was pretty insane. Our polling place alone had, I think, 1,538 people. We're one of three there. I'm suspicious we may have even been the light one. There was just a lot of people coming in and out of that building.
That's pretty awesome. I on this show in the past, I've talked about my mixed feelings about voting, and I did vote in this election. But I have to say, despite my mixed feelings about voting, I think it's pretty sweet that, you go in there, and if there's a problem, it seems like one of the default reactions is always, just cast a provisional ballot. Am I right about this?
No, because the provisional ballot is the most painful process you've ever gone through in your life.
What's the last thing
you want is for them to have to do the provisional, because the provisional is like this long form. It's extra pieces of paper. You're taping things together. It's a whole different process. If you can figure out where they really need to be, you want them to do that, and a voter certificate is just like, four lines, man. Just four lines. We can get you through this. Just bear with me for a second. But the provisional thing, you gotta hunker down. Take time. And because remember, you only got six staff people, man, and all these hundreds of people coming and going.
Wait, who are the six staff people?
You got two inspectors on the way in, two inspectors on the way out, and then you got a clerk and a warden.
So the people, because let me go through this, because I feel like it's always kind of a customer service disaster whenever I'm at the polling place. So I want to understand this. You go in there. And you're just sort of looking around, and there's no signs, no labels, no indication of what you should do.
Then you need to go to a different polling place, baby, because we have signs, we've got process, we got lines.
There's nothing. Eventually, you just sort of drift over to the nearest person, and if it's the wrong person, they yell at you, and you go to the right person eventually, and then they give you a ballot. There's those two guys at the beginning giving you the ballot, and then there's those two guys at the end who, like, when you're ready to leave, say, like, okay, we verify that you've left.
We didn't have time to. We had to actually find ways to cram time to count ballots. It was so busy that the process of actually double-checking the sealed packets was actually testing the amount of staff we had available. So we would start to run low, and we'd have to
Wait
scramble.
A second. What are the sealed packets?
So all the ballots come in sealed packs of 100.
Okay.
But you can't assume it's 100. You got to count that it's 100.
Oh.
But if you've got everybody running flat out, who's the person who's supposed to sit there and count 200 ballots, 100 to page one, 100 to page two,
and the two pages.
And how fast you possibly can do it? And that means you're a man down while that's happening.
You know, the last time we were talking about this, and we were talking about the two pages, we were taking bets on how many ballots would be screwed up, because there were actually two physical sheets of paper this year because of all the stuff on there.
You know,
did it work
people
well?
Were stunned that they were covered in words, and it was this maze of different languages, but nobody had any problem with two pieces of paper, yeah. And nobody had any problem getting them in the box. It was this moment of shock when they look at the ballot, and they're like, you got to be kidding me.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, everything was cool.
So there weren't problems with that?
Nope. The only time we have a little bit of a glitch is if the absentee voter doesn't give us page two because they don't care about pot,
mm-hmm.
Then we have to figure out how to account for that at the end of the day.
Okay.
Did you guys have a lot of people that were not voting on the second one? We're not voting on question three on page two?
I would say that we had a fair number of those, but not a huge number.
Yeah.
I mean, out of 1,500 plus, I'm talking maybe 30 blanks.
Okay.
Because what the problem is if you don't vote, the machine won't take it. So if you have no opinion, yes or no on three, and it's the only thing on page two, the machine simply cannot take it in. It can only do, it's a 0-1. It's either 0 or 1, and it can't take the null set. So you've got to put it in the side, and you have to hand count single one of those nothing votes.
So it can be dealt with, but
yes.
You can choose to do that, but the machine is going to get...
It means that at the end of the poll, close of polls, and the time it takes for you to be able to go home and like and have a nice night again,
mm-hmm.
You're sitting at tables with stacks of papers you have to go through and sort and check off on tally sheets. So when you're watching each of these go in that side hand count bin, you're just thinking, dude, we are so going to be here for hours.
I want to ask you about the mechanics of the side hand count bin. This is the 508, by the way, which nobody's already watching because they're like, what are you talking about? Because I got to use the side hand count bin because I was at Webster Square Tower, and early in the morning, the voting machine was, like, not working properly. So there was a big, big line, bigger than it would normally be, like, backed up, like, in front of the voting machine. It's like, people were just like, what's going on, what's going on, what's going on? They said that they called the city. They said they called five different numbers at the city, and they were getting, like, a answering machine message. And finally, somebody was like, put it in the side bin. And they're like, oh, okay. So there's like a slot in the side of the voting machine that seems like it doesn't go anything mechanical. It just like goes through a secured little place into a little
There is a very narrow slit that runs along the side of the box, and every single ballot that we can't deal with can reside in there temporarily until the end of the night when we have to figure out how to deal with them.
Do you have a special key that gives you access to that part?
Yes.
I'm super excited that you know about this. I was wondering how that worked.
There are three keys for the box. Well, no, there's one key that opens everything. There are three locks in the box.
Okay.
There's the side panel for the hand count. There's the panel that controls the access to the voter electronic device.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another one that opens the main compartment where all the votes sit after they go through the machine.
Okay.
That key sits with the cop all day.
Okay. That's pretty awesome.
It is kind of cool. It's like a geek dream fest. There are rules, there are process, there's keys. It's all just, you know, it's a beautiful thing.
I love this.
What I thought was interesting is that... I called the clerk's office in the morning when I started to hear that this was a widespread issue, and I talked to Josh Meduna, who, by the way, was fantastic all day. Every time I called Josh, I got him on the phone. He, you know, would listen to what I was saying. He would say that he would deal with it right away, and I would see it if I was in the place where it was happening. I would see it get dealt with like in short order. He would tell me he would make a phone call, and 10 seconds later, that phone would ring. I called Josh about this, and what he told me is that It's not a malfunction of the machine in any way. It's actually the machine operating as intended, which is to say that if you put a blank ballot in, the machine thinks that there's a potential that you might have made a mistake. Maybe you filled it out in pencil or crayon, or right. You made squares over the circles or whatever. So it kicks it back out to say to you and a polling official, are you sure? And that's kind of why it's supposed to do that. But okay. It was an interesting problem to see. I had never seen as many blank ballots, just because, we don't usually have two, and we don't usually have this, giant second page of text with like two little bubbles somewhere on it.
It actually makes a lot of sense logically, where there's plenty of cases where you would no vote on or leave blank a particular race. But typically, as you said, with a one page ballot, if you were going to no vote or blank out the entire election, that would be staying home. You wouldn't actually come in just to submit a fully blank ballot.
Though that does happen. You will have principled people, one or two, who will come in to cast the ballot and vote for absolutely no one.
And being the charming, nice man that you are, you just slide it in the side and say, have a good day, folks.
That's right. Thank you
this
for coming.
This one was odd, where we had the second page that it was a controversial ballot question. They probably should have put question one on the second page and put question three on the first page, since question one, both sides were actually telling people not to vote on it anyways prior to the election taking place because of a settlement issue on the question. We had kind of the opposite issue at the polling place that I was at, where we had significant number of relatively young people who, when they were handed their two-page ballot, they would say, oh, no, I'm only here to vote on question three, and try and give back page one.
I don't need any politicians, man. What do you think of? Who do you think I am?
Just need my medical weed.
There was all these...
My back!
It was actually very healthy young college students who were coming in taking great pride in that question three was there and wanted to make sure that they were coming in to vote on that. And in many cases, they were just indifferent on the actual races.
They don't know the locals.
Well, what was funny, we were able to, in some cases, identify because, going at the end of the night, looking back on write-ins, looking over the shoulder as they were counting write-ins, you could almost match up the number of ballots where you had a yes on question three, and then over here you had a full blank slate, and then Donald Duck was written in for Register of Deeds or what have you. Yeah. Right? Jello Biafra, I think, got 3 votes at 8-1 yesterday, which was amazing, because I had to explain to all the wardens who Jello Biafra actually was, and it became just...
Did they have his correct street address?
No, they did not have his correct residency, and I'm not sure how that's going to be dealt with long-term in terms of accounting.
But I believe other is the other category that will be used for that.
How do you... So I actually did a write-in for this election. The race
you
between
are
John
one of those
Benenda.
People that drive me nuts.
Who ran against John Benenda?
LeBeau, I think you pronounced it. Was it LeBeau was the name?
Yeah.
John Benenda's race?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Bill LeBeau. And I'm just like, probably awesome guys. I want neither of these guys near the quarters of power, delivers of power. And so for the first time in a long time, I wrote in Cthulhu. Because I realized one of the reasons, this is an old joke, right? It's like when you're tired of voting for the lesser of two evils. And I realized explaining to somebody some of my concerns with voting, it's that I want to vote for somebody who I'm excited about. Voting for the lesser of two evils is like against what I think is my personal philosophy, which is go big or go home.
Well, see, in my case.
I want to vote for somebody who's seriously evil if I'm going to vote for somebody who's evil.
And very similar to my case where at 9:30 at night, I'm trying to explain to a group of 80-year-old women who the dead Kennedys are. Now, you probably at your polling place had
And you're
some,
like, Holiday in Cambodia.
You probably had some young person who's now trying to explain Lovecraft to a bunch of 80-year-old women who are just like, but we just want to go home. We've been here for 18 hours now.
Possibly it invoked Mighty Cthulhu and the Webster Square Towers are now gone.
To touch on a couple of things, you'd asked Colin about turnout. And I didn't see any hard number come out of Worcester in terms of the overall bump in votes, but I saw Boston today reported that Boston was reporting 65% above 2008 turnout, which is kind of, for all the cynics and naysayers out there, Americans just don't care about voting anymore. To get 65% higher turnout than we had in 2008, that's almost like inventing people. It's just
Don't say that.
We had
my
the same
God.
Instinct.
That's the last thing.
But you know what I'm saying? But we actually, in a way, in terms of, so we invented registered voters, because even Central Mass, I think the number was somewhere over 100,000 in terms of new voters registered, both sides. I mean, it was almost equal split between Republican and Democrat new voters. I mean, the energy for this election was just through the roof.
Yeah,
and the bigger cities were where you were able to put a pulse, I think, on that and just see how big of a bump there was. the polling place I was at, I think in 2000, and it was 8-1 down Mead Street in Spectral Services, they had somewhere around 390 voters total in 2008. And yesterday they had 772. So again, a relatively small polling place, but still the bump was noticeable and palpable in the room as well.
Let me ask
a tiny space, by the way. I mean, that's a narrow hallway type space.
Yeah, it's about half the width of this room, and it's, you know, and that's including the space for the tables, the polling machine. You've got this tiny little alley to walk through. It was a tight squeeze, but.
I mean, I was just going to say that's the thing that I hope gets sort of taken away from this is, I mean, I would say that the vast, other than the inactive thing, which is infuriates me, which is I keep mentioning it. I think most of the issues we saw yesterday were really related to just, you know, we haven't had a turnout like that. And they, you know, I always hear people say, you know, especially people in the you know, get out the vote game, you know, we joke about what would happen if we actually turned out 100% of the voters, and the answer is we would crush the system. It would shut down.
You would break the staff.
Anarchists of Worcester.
That's how
you
do it.
You want to smash the system?
No, but
voter registration.
Honest to God, with that many people coming through, we couldn't figure out how to do lunch breaks. We couldn't figure out how to do dinner breaks. We had trouble when somebody needed to go out to hit the bathroom because we were down a man. There was no spare staff. Everyone was working flat out. So, like, we are not built. The system is not built to do that kind of turnout right now.
What
and the spaces that we have people in are for the primaries, where we have people wandering in from time to time.
What are you supposed to do whenever it's time to take a break?
During normal conditions?
Because you said you have one warden.
One warden, one clerk.
And when the warden's not there, the clerk takes over as being in charge of the polling place.
What is the clerk? You said there's two people registering, people coming in.
There's two inspectors on the way in, two inspectors on the way out.
A warden and a clerk?
Right. So what ends up happening is on the way in, you get a person with a book, they check you in, then the other person makes sure that you get the ballots and also is making sure that the ballots are being watched. And is also usually watching the booths to make sure that things aren't going weird. On the way out, you got one person who's checking them out, and then there's another person to make sure that the whole getting it into the machine thing works.
Right.
Because in this case, you got two ballots. People want to put them both through at once and explode the machine.
Right.
People are always perpetually confused about feeding something into an automatic slot. I mean, it's humorous because you can do it upside down, right side up. You can do it backwards. You can do it forwards. And people just look at it and their mind goes blank. Mm. So you need to have someone at the box.
Oh, hey, Bruce, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, if you wanted to vote somewhere, somebody evil should have voted for Satan.
Well, Cthulhu, I feel like is on the same page. I almost voted for you, man, but I don't think you're in that same. I don't think you're in that district.
Nah.
Anyway.
I'm pretty distant in that district.
Colin Novick, continue.
Okay, that's gonna be a ringtone, man. Sell that.
Yeah. So at that point, you've got two people who are spare theoretically, clerk and warden. But if you've got people dealing with inactives, if you've got people dealing with provisionals, if you've got people wandering in who aren't in the book and yet figure out where they're supposed to be, if you have to go out in the hallway because nobody knows what polling place they're supposed to be in, you're out. That's it. You got one person handling problems and one person directing people where they're supposed to be. Everyone is working. Everyone is straight out. And then you have to occasionally do things like count ballots.
Right.
It's just crazy. And it's okay when it's quiet because you can have someone double up. But if it's straight out, there's no one to double.
Yeah. I want
to
ask you,
especially with like absentee ballots where they need to be processed throughout the day as you have downtime and whatnot.
Absentee ballots. Usually we get a pack, 20 ballots, right? They give us a freaking box stuffed all the way across. And we're like, oh, usually we'll just wait for a dead period and do them. There was no dead period.
Right.
So if you have a line of 30 people, are you going to cut them off to do an absentee ballot? You know, no, you can't.
So everybody just hold tight. I need like 10 minutes here.
So at the end of the night, when we close out and we get all the voters done, we're just, as staff, going through one after the other, after the other, after the other, just banging out the absentee ballots and getting them in the box. Mm. Although, turns out the absentee ballots usually don't want to go in the box. But that's a different story.
Nah. I want to just ask you a customer service or give you a customer feedback question. Who decides where the tables go in the polling place?
The warden. Because so it's a combo.
Here's the thing. Whenever it got crowded, there was a lot of situations where, like, people were, like, having to, like, cross across the, like, put the thing in the ballot and, like, cross back across the line. And, like, the whole thing didn't work if there were more than, like, four people in the line.
So theoretically.
Everything just needed to be moved, like, 2 feet this way, 3 feet this way.
So theoretically, Rushford has, like, this vision for how it works.
Mm-hmm.
But he tells the park staff. The park staff set it up based on what they remember of the vision. And then the wardens come in the morning, or the clerks, and the inspectors, and they all have an opinion, they tweak it a little bit more. So it's like a whole lot of cooks, and depending, like the final person is the clerk and the warden. Hmm. And if they get an idea for process and they can make people move, then it works good. And sure. if they don't, and it's set up crazy, and that's just the way it is, or if they have a, even worse, if they have a pattern, well, we've always done it this way. We've always had them cross
right.
twice.
Right. And like, honestly, the only reason I'm complaining about this is I feel like there were honestly places where like 30 seconds was being like added on, which is not a big deal, but when there's like 30 people in line, an extra 30 seconds a person is like, you know,
and that's
adding up. Yes, Bruce.
No, no.
Thanks, man.
So, no, but that's when having.
I'm sorry, we're ignoring you so much on this. Anyway,
that's okay. When if you have staff who actually take initiative and are fairly like you know into procedure and policy, it works better.
Yeah.
So if you got somebody who digs this and is juiced for it, yeah, you just work it out. You figure it out.
And it's, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning when you're sitting with your colleagues in an empty room, I'm sure the visual of this makes perfect sense. And then when you take, you know, 300 new friends and stick them into that room, suddenly your vision of how the party is going to function doesn't make so much sense anymore.
For instance, 9-2, they have a line that triples back on itself in order to accommodate all the people who are waiting in line to get to the table. Halfway through the day, they're like, you know, we should pull this table back so more people can be in the building.
Right. Mm.
So it's sort of all of a sudden, everything stops. You pick up the tables and you move it back. You know, and then 10 more people are warmer. But yeah, you don't know it until it's too late.
Right. It's a really challenging situation too. I mean, I've been to a lot of polling places in Worcester at this point, I feel like. But, you know, yesterday I went to, I don't know, probably, if not 30, very close to 30 polling locations all over the city. And you realize that there are literally no two polling places that are physically the same. And so, you know, I can't even imagine trying to set out a vision for what, you know, that would encompass, you know, a grocery store and a school and, you know, the senior center and, like,
a
church basement and this strange little, like, hallway space at the at the Main South CDC. Like, how do you create a common vision for that? It's crazy.
Yeah. I'd say I would advocate less for a common vision and more for, like, and again, this is just me complaining as an ignorant person. Like, it would be interesting to see, like, I don't know, I'd be interested to see, like, how the layouts for these polling places change year to year. If, like, people realize, like, oh, this is broken, but then, like, the 1 year when this table was over there, it worked better, like, you know, and you sort of learn. Because, like, I feel like any of this stuff, it sounds to me like, you know, like, the lines get bigger and bigger, and suddenly you realize, like, oh, people are having to, like, cross back across the line and walk around behind this table, and it's, but at that point, you're just like, listen, we don't have any time to move a table.
Yeah, well, if it's making a big problem, then you'll stop things and you'll just fix it. But, I mean, again, that's the initiative thing. I mean, how many, if you've got a staff who are fairly senior, they're not going to go moving tables around.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we were blessed in that we have a supply closet where I could pull out 8 extra tables and sprinkle them around a room. If you're at some other place, dude, you've got what they gave you, and that's it. You got no other options, no other equipment, no place to get more stuff. You're just, you got what you got. That's it.
It's probably worth pointing out too that we're still in a relatively young period in Worcester where we're still experimenting with these new polling locations. It wasn't too long ago that we're still predominantly using schools, and schools by nature are designed to handle flow. You know, kids coming in, kids going out. You have gymnasiums, you have big open spaces,
wide hallways.
Yeah, I mean, everything is designed for people moving. And the city made a decision that they didn't want children to be exposed to democracy. So we brought the polling places out of the schools and put them into checkout lines at grocery stores. It's created some issues that, you know, long term, most communities, I think, still do use schools as their big spaces for voting.
Yeah,
and it's
I was just going to say it's exactly that. I mean, if you wanted to solve easily 95% of these sort of logistical problems, if you closed school on election day and you moved them all into schools, you could solve them. There's an almost infinite amount of space available. You can handle crowds. You have long hallways. You could have hundreds of people inside, so they're not having to stand outside in the cold.
Chris, we got to wrap it up. The limits of television. Thanks for being on the show, Chris Robarge, and Colin Novick, and Brendan Malikan, and very briefly, Bruce the Snow Ghost Russell. This is the 508 Show. If you got an email, send it to us at pieandcoffee@gmail.com. We'll see you next week.